the Book Club at 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. A medieval thriller, The Passion of Dulce, the newest from author Julie Barry, the best-selling author of All the Truth That's in Me. This very different from All the Truth That's in Me, and I'm going to let Julie tell you the tale. Julie, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
Thank you, Mark.
Taking us back to Provence in 1241, this is very different from your previous novel. What inspired you to write The Passion of Dulce in this historical setting in a time, well, it was called the Dark Ages for a reason?
It was indeed. You know, I had never heard of the controversies surrounding heresy in the early 13th century in southern France. The Albigensian Crusade, I don't think I'd ever heard the term. And a couple years ago, I was listening to a history lecture, and it really delved into this subject, and I thought, how is it that I've never heard of this? And so I became curious, and I started finding books at the library to just learn more about this time period. And the more that I studied, the more fascinated I became, and I saw that these conflicts really sent tendrils out into history that still affect us today. And I just was mesmerized by the fact that something so pivotal was so relatively unknown, at least in the States. And so it just seemed like a fertile setting for a terrific story, because there was so much conflict, danger, intrigue, and you know, conflicting passions and conflicts of ideas, as well as, you know, horrific physical violence. So that's the kind of stuff we novelists are looking for.
and did it, was it specific to the lecture you heard, specific to the south of France, or was it about heretics in general?
Well, I am a big fan of the courses that you can listen to from the Great Courses Company. They have a really rich selection of topics. And so I was listening to a course called The Terror of History, and it delved into heresy as a subject, a broad subject, as well as magic and witchcraft in the Middle Ages, millenarian movements, and some of the sort of you might say fringe religious movements, as well as some other topics. So it was a kind of broad sweep of heresy and a lecture that focused specifically on the Albigensian Crusade.
So transport us back to France in the year 1241 and set the setting, I guess you could say, for The Passion of Dulce. It is very nicely set up. Though a historical novel, you don't over explain what's happening there. Why is that?
Well, it's a fine line that you want to walk. You want to pull people into the story. You don't want, you know, your novel to feel like a textbook in disguise. You want the characters and their real lives to have the uppermost attention. But, of course, you do have to still build the world and help people understand the conflicts that shaped it. So it becomes even harder when we're talking about an unfamiliar period of history. For example, if I wanted to write a World War II story, I wouldn't need to explain to my readers what a Nazi was. But if you're writing about something in the 13th century, you've got a little more heavy lifting to do. But Provence in the 13th century was a very dangerous place and time. In 1229, a 20-year crusade had just ended, a 20-year battle of northern Frenchmen fighting against the south of France, which wasn't yet France at the time. And this was a crusade called by the Pope, Pope Innocent III, because of a belief that the south of France was infested with heretics. And so this 20-year war just brutalized the region, decimated entire towns and villages, and the region was just left crippled and reeling afterwards, economically and in terms of, I guess you'd say, morale. And following the end of that war, which was fought over heresy, it was determined that there were still heretics in the region. And so the Catholic officials that wanted to stamp out heresy needed to come up with a new technique to, you know, prosecute their campaign. And that technique was Inquisition. When we think of Inquisition, we usually think of the Spanish Inquisition, but
yes,
this predated it. And it you know, it kind of set the prototype for what would follow later in Europe. And so Dominican friars were going two by two, town by town, interrogating every boy 14 and up and every girl 12 and up to find out if they'd ever associated with one of these so-called heretics. And it was really kind of a reign of terror, because the punishments were brutal and lasting and dealt out pretty heavily.
Julie Barry, the author of The Passion of Dulce, her newest novel, learn about it at wvxu.org. And these characters, you shape them, you know, Dulce herself, a female mystic, very easy to relate to, but the power and the strength and the terror that the authorities from the church instill in these people is amazing in the book, and that was reality back in the day.
It certainly was. It reminds us, I think, of the Gestapo or of the KGB. It feels eerily modern, and yet it was, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, and it came from the church, which, you know, is obviously a, you know, incredibly painful sort of betrayal of their mission to do good. And it created a great opportunity to look at what zeal and ideology and dogma and fanaticism can do.
And one of the most terrifying aspects of the situation with the church, you mentioned talking to all the boys and all the young girls as well, was the guilt by association when they found someone they thought was a heretic.
It's true. The people that they thought of as heretics were called locally the good men and the good women. They were Christian, and they practiced a very sort of simple lifestyle in every town and village, and they were widely respected before the war. And afterwards, when these inquisitors were combing the area, all they really wanted to find out is, did you ever associate with a heretic? And by associate, they could mean something as simple as greeting them in the streets one time, or giving them a gift of food one time, or delivering a message or running an errand for them even one time. And I found that, you know, mind-boggling. I thought, modern readers are never going to believe me when I tell them that this is how far they stretched the point. There was no accommodation or understanding offered for the fact that these people were ubiquitous throughout the region. Everybody knew them. Everybody said hello to them. Everyone respected them and treated them in a neighborly way. And that meant that the entire region was guilty of heresy in this mindset that said association is guilt.
And there was pressure applied by the church on the local lords, and it wasn't the church that meted out the punishment, but the local lords who did.
You're right, and that really shows the contrast of how the region changed before and after the Crusade. Prior to the Crusade starting, Pope Innocent III had ordered Count Raymond of Toulouse to turn over all the heretics in his lands to the church for punishment, and he refused to do so. And, you know, in a very brave and loyal display, said, no, of course not. These are our neighbors. These are our relatives. You know, we're not going to, you're simply mistaken in thinking that they're heretics, and we're not going to turn them over to you for punishment. And this loyalty fueled the war. But by the end of the war, these local lords and nobles had been so crushed, so beaten down by the violence caused by the war, as well as the sanctions that the church could impose, like excommunication and interdict. So by the end of the war, it was kind of like hot potato, you know, get them out of my lands, take them, kill them, just leave me alone. And so that was the real shift.
Well, in The Passion of Dulce, I have to say it's the trio of peasant sisters that gave me the most entertainment, and their machinations within the village where they live. Talk about those three peasant sisters.
I had the idea years ago that it would be fun to imagine Macbeth's three witches as teenage sisters running a roadside inn. I don't know where that came from.
That's exactly what I thought about when I read it, Julie. I thought it was great.
So. Oh, thank you. And you know, they're not really witches with a capital W in this story, but they have, you might say, certain knacks, certain talents that they utilize. But they have what I hope is a very authentic relationship, very distinct and real personalities, and a very real loyalty to one another. I'm always very interested in those bonds between friends and sisters and siblings. I'm from a large family myself, and I think that those relationships are both complicated and you know, richly rewarding. So, but these three sisters, Botia is our main character. She's the middle sister, and she's a bit of a matchmaker and quite a talented liar. And so she always thinks she can lie her way out of trouble, lie to the inquisitors to protect Dulce, their mystic. Plazenza, the older sister, is a great beauty, and she runs the tavern, brews the ale, and bosses everyone around. And the youngest sister, Sazia, is a bit of a fortune teller and rather sarcastic and biting wit. But the three of them together are, you know, they fight, they squabble, but they work together and they stand by one another in ways that were very moving to me.
Julie Berry talking about her medieval thriller, The Passion of Dolsa, available where books are sold. You can learn more at our website, wvxu.org. And I also love that interplay between the little W witchcraft of the peasant sisters and the mysticism of Dolsa. And I'm curious as to which female mystics really informed the character of Dolsa.
Oh, I have been a great fan of the medieval mystics for a long time, and in some ways you'd say Dolsa is a bit of a composite of many real women, including Claire of Assisi, Catherine of Siena, Julian of Norwich, Hildegard of Bingen, Teresa of Avila. These women and others like them are so inspiring, such fascinating and perplexing stories. Their courage, their devotion, even their zeal, their passion, and their willingness to risk all and abandon all and even live lives of suffering in order to pursue the happiness that they felt they had found in God is really remarkable. And even I think for those people who don't necessarily feel the same sort of religious fervor, we can't help but admire their courage and their defiance. They're somewhat feminist heroes as well as religious heroes because they dared to defy convention and choose to live a life on their own terms, to bypass marriage and pursue what they felt would be a more rewarding spiritual and intellectual life in the company of other women. And they're literary heroes because they wrote their stories, and they're some of the first women to write works of literature in Europe.
Well, and you said mentioned feminism. I was struck as how they were the first feminists. The peasant sisters there, too.
Absolutely. You know, I think we have this sort of stock impression of the Middle Ages as a world that was oppressive to women, and it certainly was a world where women's rights were very limited, and that's certainly true. And yet, as you study the actual history of actual people and actual places, there are many remarkable examples of incredibly powerful women who were, you know, shrewd and powerful, who could engage in diplomacy or even in warfare in ways that defy this convention and cause us to think twice about our very sort of limited stereotypes about what women were like in the Middle Ages. Well, it certainly wasn't a picnic, but there were many women who did amazing things.
I was also struck reading The Passion of Dolsa how what the church was trying to oppress could have really been valuable to the church.
It's so true. I think that in any religious tradition, there will always be new voices who come along proposing a sort of new way of looking at the faith. And some will be embraced as saints and innovators and as helpful to the faithful, and others will be driven out as threats to the fold. And in some cases, what is lost could have been very precious. And even if the ideas that are sort of rejected are ideas of little value, let's say, I think there's still maybe a wound dealt to the soul of the organization if it uses violence to drive away unorthodox ideas.
Well, I have to ask, after the popularity of All the Truth That's in Me and the fact that it won a Carnegie Medal and the Edgar Award for Best Young Adult, whether that brought any pressure to your writing for The Passion of Dolsa and what readers' reaction has been to this book, because it is so different from All the Truth That's in Me.
It is different, and you try not to feel pressure, you try not to let the last book hang over your shoulder as you write the next one, but I definitely did want to write something that could live up to the response that All the Truth had received. I've been really blown away and grateful to see that The Passion of Dolsa has received 5-starred reviews in the review journals and a really glowing New York Times review this past Sunday. So I've been really happy, but also just really impressed to see the individual responses from readers who are struck by the mixture of religious and spiritual ideas with historical and dramatic ideas. And in particular, people seem to be responding very enthusiastically to the ways in which religion is portrayed both positively and negatively, and the ways in which it builds us up and the ways in which it tears us apart. So it's not a one-sided portrayal of the life of faith. That's meant a lot to me, to see readers respond in that way. It absolutely was a risk to write a medieval religious book, but I've been really happy to see how people respond to it so warmly, whether or not they are themselves religious, which is great, because I certainly didn't want it to be, you know, only on the religious shelf. That's not how I thought of it.
Well, thank you for the story and your time this morning, Julie.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate the opportunity.
Julie Berry. Her newest novel, a medieval thriller, is titled The Passion of Dolce. You can learn more about that book and her previous book, All the Truth That's in Me, on our website, wvxu.org. This is the Book Club at 91.7.